This episode of Between the Rows was brought to you in part by Bayer. Bayer continues to make significant investments into the development of new breeding technologies and state-of-the-art cropping solutions to ensure the profitability and sustainability of your farm. This season, grow with confidence. Grow with Bayer. Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications. Today, we bring you a full episode with our climate panel that looks at what climate change could mean for your farm. Our panel features Bruce Burnett, Director of Markets and Weather Information with Glacier Farm Media.
We're in for some changing climate change fairly rapidly, almost, in a way. So it's something that we need to get on with the task of preparing ourselves for this changing environment.
Paul Bullock, a soil scientist with the University of Manitoba.
Are we reacting fast enough? Well, I have to admit, sometimes I think producers, like many other people, have to be kind of drag kicking and screaming.
And Danny Blair, a climatologist from the University of Winnipeg.
We've been dragging our feet as a society, and we need to get on with it. And farm community has a really important leadership role in that whole scenario.
It's an episode you need to hear. Now here's today's host, Gord Gilmore.
Hi, and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore. It seemed like the perfect way to safeguard the world's seed supply from any number of doomsday scenarios, ranging from nuclear holocaust to environmental collapse. Place them in a vault tucked into the permafrost, located on an isolated island near the North Pole. But the entrance to the global seed vault, located in northern Norway, received an unexpected and unwanted visitor recently: water. Seepage at the entry was caused in part by melting permafrost, something the scientists that designed the vault didn't anticipate. Temperatures in the Arctic region have been rising at twice the global average in a quickening trend that climate scientists blame on man-made greenhouse gases. The region where the vault is located has sometimes had rain, even in the depths of winter when the sun doesn't rise. This is just one of the many wild cards global warming could throw at global agriculture in the coming decades. Today, we've assembled a panel of climate watchers to talk about what we know and what we don't know about the implications for farmers. Joining us is Danny Blair, Director of Science for the Prairie Climate Center at the University of Winnipeg. Hi, Danny.
Good morning.
We also have Paul Bullock, Acting Head, Department of Soil Science at the University of Manitoba. Hi, Paul.
Hello.
And Bruce Burnett, an agrometeorologist who has recently joined Glacier Farm Media as Director of Weather and Market Information. Hi, Bruce.
Hi.
First of all, what's your reaction to the news about the vault's problems? Do you see this as a signal of more surprises to come? Let's start with Danny.
It's not a surprise to me at all, really, that there's that kind of problem happening up in the high Arctic, because the high Arctic is the canary in the coal mine. There's massive changes underway, and even more changes predicted for the future. And it's an example of the kinds of surprises, perhaps, that we as climatologists have been telling people to get ready for. Where, you know, there's a very volatile climate change going on, and more to come.
Now, you do a certain amount of research that's related to climate change. Can you tell me about that, Danny?
Yeah, sure. Well, at the Prairie Climate Center, we are we're trying to get the message out about what climate change is doing and is going to do to the prairies, including the important ag sector. And climate models have a very clear message, and that is that we must expect a lot of warming coming our way, and some really significant and important changes to precipitation as well. So it's a very important issue to me and to a lot of people, and we're trying to convince everybody that it is just that.
Paul, you're doing a lot of research into this area as well. Do you agree that we're seeing some clear warnings?
Well, I think that the actual changes in climate, like Danny is saying, I think there is some fairly clear signals that are coming based on recent history and what the models are telling us. And what I've really focused on is trying to basically translate climate change into implications that I would call agroclimate, and how crops, what sort of changes are we going to see that are important to crops? So you know, things like heat unit accumulation and the types of crops that we can produce here, you know, changes in things like water balance and that sort of thing, you know, looking at both the evaporative demand and the precipitation, and put that together to say, as a plant, as a crop, as an agricultural export, what is, you know, what are those changes that we can expect to see? And sometimes those things don't translate quite the way we think they might, and so that's really where I've been looking at it.
So what is it telling us so far? Can you talk about that at all?
Well, there's been some surprises. So in general, with as Danny has mentioned, with a warming trend, you know, in Western Canada, we're at the northern extreme of where crop production is even possible, and a warming trend at first glance, I think, has a lot of positives in terms of, you know, it's we're seeing that for example, the length of the frost free period is lengthening on average. We're seeing some positive trends in heat unit accumulation, that's changing some of the mix of crops that we can grow. So those sorts of things are somewhat expected. The surprises are, one is that the variability, the spatial variability of these trends is quite a bit more than you might think. You know, you might get the impression, hey, things are warming up. I'm, you know, in this particular location, I've got this many more days to work with. But you can't be sure of that. There's places in Western Canada where the growing season has actually become even somewhat shorter. Frost-free period has actually gone down. We've seen places where corn heat unit accumulation has actually declined. And it's rather inexplicable why that has occurred. So there are some surprises sometimes when we're trying to translate what's happening with our climate into what those implications will be for agricultural production.
Now, Bruce, from your work as a weather and market specialist, how do you view that variability and that those surprises?
Well, certainly the overall question of climate variability, especially in the prairies, has a couple of impacts. I think, first of all, generally speaking, the risks to farmers increase, again, because of the variability. When you're growing crops, you like to have fairly consistent expectation of what type of growing season you're going to have. Now, the prairie climate has been, you know, over the years quite variable in itself. So it's not like we haven't adapted to that process. Mm-hmm. But especially as Paul says, when we bring in some different crops like corn and soybeans, we certainly do have to be sure that those crops, if they start to comprise a significant portion of our area, are in the long term going to be a viable crop. And I think for the most part they are, with the increased amount of heat units that we have. But as Paul points out, there's different places in the prairies where the growing season is actually getting a little bit shorter. So again, that it has to be something that farmers have to evaluate, certainly by their location, as to whether, you know, changing to some of these crops is going to be beneficial in the long run.
Now, I have a question, actually, I'd like to pose to every member of the panel here, and that is, we're looking at something that is very long-term climate versus something that's short-term weather. How well do we really understand the dynamics at play here? Danny, can we start with you?
Well, for sure, the weather is very different from climate, and I wrestle with this all the time talking to people. You know, they look out the window or they experience some short-term weather events and they think that's representative of long-term climate trends, and that's just not the case. And, you know, to reiterate, we have an incredibly variable climate. But from my perspective, the long-term trends are really important. Absolutely, there, as Paul and Bruce indicate, there are some really interesting and even confounding patterns of variability in the trends in recent decades. But the climate models tell me that that spatial variability is going to eventually be swamped by the overall trend of warming, in particular. That is absolutely going to produce some positive impacts. But I'm worried about in the long run, in the decades ahead, just what the impacts might be in agriculture, even in the very adaptive kind of environment that that farmers are immersed in all the time. There are some long-term trends in the climate that are really worrisome to me in terms of stress and risk and variability.
And, Paul, do you agree with that? I know that I've heard more than a few people say that, you know, here on the prairies, global warming is kind of a faint hope rather than a concern. Would you share Danny's concern?
Well, I think Danny's absolutely right. You know, basically, climate is a way for us to try to simplify some of this horrendous variability we see in weather day to day, week to week. And so it helps us to look at mean values and extremes and look at them over the longer term to see how they are actually heading, because, you know, day to day, it's so variable that it's hard for us to get our mind around it. And it is those trends that we're looking at, even though those trends are basically a derivative of the day-to-day variability that we have, just boiled down to means and extremes and other sorts of climatic measurements that we make. I mean, the other side, like in terms of getting a handle on this, Gord, that I think is related, is that we understand, I think, warming, as Danny said, is very clear. Precipitation is more difficult. It's even more highly variable than temperature, and so it's difficult to know how that's going to turn out. We haven't. There's one thing that isn't varying, that we know exactly what's happening, and we're pretty sure where it's going to go, and that's atmospheric carbon dioxide, which is a huge factor in agriculture because that's plant food. And when it comes to actually having a handle on all of this, the big gap is understanding the interactions between these. So even though we know that CO2 has been rising, we've measured it for now for close to 60 years, and seen that trend very, very steady, and we know it. What we don't understand as well is the interaction between, say, a higher temperature, perhaps a lack of precipitation. How does a plant respond to the combination of all those factors? That's one of the things I think is a real gap in our understanding, and very difficult for us to try and to get a handle on, so that we do understand what we might be facing in 20 or 30 years from now, if our models are giving us accurate information. What does that actually mean for a crop?
Mm-hmm. Now, Bruce, from a practical standpoint for a farmer, what sort of trends have you been observing over the last several years or couple of decades, perhaps even? Like, are there areas where we're seeing a longer frost-free period? What are some of the anomalies that you've spotted as well? Like, are there areas where you're seeing a shorter day or a shorter growing season?
Certainly, like, in terms of the growing season, and other than a few anomalies, there, generally speaking, our growing season is lengthening, which is positive for not only new crops that we can introduce, but generally speaking, for the yield of existing crops, there's a tendency, in terms of looking at the length of the growing season, is related to yield in a lot of cases, if you look at the agronomy side of things. One other thing that we haven't talked about that in terms of Western Canadian agriculture, that I think is very important to realize. Even though maybe the impacts locally, and again, as Danny says, we're not very certain, and there are some things that we have to really worry about probably in the long term in terms of the variability of our climate, but how it does impact other parts of the globe. Canadian agriculture is highly dependent on exports. How does the climate change impact exports, export flow, those types of things? Because in other parts of the world, there are probably some negative impacts here that are a concern. Just one thing that just to illustrate, you would say, well, the Arctic warming doesn't really impact agriculture itself, but certainly we're now looking at a situation where the Arctic is getting warm enough that it looks very feasible that we'll see the ability to move freight through the Arctic Ocean, maybe not, in 5 years, but certainly in 10 to 20 years. And again, that could change trade flows significantly. Again, it depends on this crop and the situation, but certainly that would be a big change in what currently is certain very defined trade routes that have been established over the centuries here. So something to just keep in mind that climate change not only affects farmers directly in the prairies, but also impacts our customers, potential competitors, as well as perhaps the trade flows even.
You know, you made an interesting point about these things that that develop over long periods of time. One of the things that I think does develop over long periods of time is of course, the ecosystem. And that ecosystem is a lot more complex than let's just add some more heat to it. One of the things that will probably change is our pest spectrum, our weed spectrum, that sort of thing. Can you comment on that at all? Bruce, let's start with you.
Well, certainly, again, as our environment changes, and we're starting to see this in periods when we've had warmer winters, the number of pests that survive were our cold winters. And again, it's not a linear thing. We've experienced warm winters in the past, but we're starting to see some encroachment, some movement of some of the pests, certainly some of the plant diseases as well, are able to survive in certain times in certain climates will become more prevalent. That's just the way it goes in terms of how the ecosphere works in especially in agriculture. So that's something that we're going to have to deal with over the next number of decades as well, is some of these changes to some of the things we're trying to protect our crops against as well.
Now, Paul, as a soil scientist, is there anything there in the changing environment that we should be concerned about in terms of how our soils interact? I know that in a lot of ways the annual freeze is sort of our ace in the hole for locking in our nitrogen in the fall, that sort of thing. What about that? Is there anything there you're looking at?
Well, I mean, on the soil side, I mean, it seems like recently there's been a greater understanding of the linkages between soil and climate. Soil is an enormous reserve of carbon, and part of the carbon cycle is a big piece of that. But even starting to look at how you manage your agricultural land and you can do this perhaps in ways that are more, from a mitigation point of view, more climate friendly. For example, we know that our particular climate, we get freeze thaw, wet dry cycles, and we get bursts of nitrous oxide out of our soils, especially if we've added any kind of nitrogen supplement to them. And under certain conditions, you get this burst of nitrous oxide, which is quite a potent greenhouse gas. You know, and are there ways and means, we have research going on here right now to look at ways that are more climate friendly. So definitely, I think there is things on the soil side, everything from the relationship, direct interactions with the atmosphere to its contributions or its sink potential for greenhouse gases, and even as a barometer on the state of the atmosphere at a given point in time.
Mm-hmm. Now, Danny, what do you think about this? Do you think that there are any sort of positive implications, negative implications that you'd like to explore in terms of agriculture here on the prairies?
Oh, there certainly are positive aspects to it. It's the lengthening of the growing season, the capability to grow new kinds of crops that have different heat growing degree demands and so forth are, there's some real benefits there, absolutely. And as Paul indicated, the soil is a very important component of the carbon system, and the farmers are a very important aspect of all this as well. And we don't understand necessarily what, as Paul indicated, especially there, we don't necessarily understand how all the interactions are going to change and evolve over time as some of these really important changes occur. So there's some work to be done there. But, in talking to farmers, they've got solutions. They're up to the challenge, but as a climatologist looking at the climate model data, for the future, we need to start to think about this now to be ready for the range the possibilities of the future, to take advantage of them and to minimize the risk. There's a lot of risk in the future if we don't get our head around this sooner than later.
One final question I want to pose to all three of you, and we'll start with you, Danny. Are farmers in the agriculture industry adapting quickly enough?
Well, Jackie, that's a tough one there, Cord. I don't know. I have a lot of respect for the farm community, and in the last couple of years in particular, with the Prairie Climate Center in play, you know, we've had a chance to talk to farmers young and old, and I'm always terribly impressed by them. So I'm confident that they're going to do a good job in adapting to a lot of the risk. But as I say, not to beat the drum, but I'm worried about the long-term risk and making sure that we're in a place to minimize the risk and take advantage of the opportunities. We've been dragging our feet as a society, and we need to get on with it. And the farm community has a really important leadership role in that whole scenario.
Paul, do you agree, leadership role?
Well, I think that, you know, I agree that I'm from a farm myself, and just with lots of interactions with producers, you know, that does keep my faith there, that there's an ability, an inherent ability. Quite frankly, if you're not adaptive, Mother Nature and the financial markets will thin the herd. So the people that survive are the ones that know how to do this. And so that gives me some faith in this. Are we reacting fast enough? Well, I have to admit, sometimes I think producers, like many other people, have to be kind of drag kicking and screaming. Sometimes it takes some kind of either an incentive or some kind of penalty or something to spur the action that's required. But when it's required, I feel some confidence that there's the people that are there on the ground that have to figure out how to make this happen. How to produce successfully and economically, they've got that ability, and we need to be thinking about how we can support that, and when the changes are needed, that we've got the support systems in place to make sure that they do happen.
Bruce, final word to you. Do you share this optimism?
Yes, I do, and we've had a fairly extensive experience on the prairies here now in terms of our agriculture. With most areas now well over 100 years of production, farmers over the years have been quite adaptive. As Paul pointed out, it's sort of an adapt or don't survive type of thing that goes on. So I think in terms of adapting to the changing climate, I think between farmers and the industry, are probably up to and government up to the task. But again, we do have to take a look at the future and be realistic about it. This is something that, as Danny says, the models are definitely indicating that we're in for some changing climate change fairly rapidly, almost in a way. So it's something that we need to get on with the task of preparing ourselves for this changing environment.
Well, I'm afraid that's all we have time for this week, but I'm sure we'll be following and revisiting this issue in the not-too-distant future. Thanks to Paul Bullock from the University of Manitoba, Danny Blair from the University of Winnipeg, and Bruce Burnett from Glacier Farm Media. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Gord.
Thanks, Gord.
Thank you.
And thanks to you for joining us this week. You've been listening to Between the Rows, and I'm your host, Gord Gilmore.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Between the Rows. Our goal at Bayer is to continue to progress our lineup of high-performing seed and crop protection solutions so that we can meet specific grower needs like yours. Because when it comes to your farm, Bayer is with you from beginning to end. Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca. And sign up today.